भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
So then continuing with Prahlad Maharaj's instructions in the 7th canto, 5th chapter. So now, Hiranyakashipu is a very affectionate father. He has asked his son, what have you learned in this Gurukul, in your training? So then he gave him a reply, talking of devotional service and all this. So then the Hiranyakashipu is very upset, and then asked the teachers, why you're teaching these things to my son? And he said, we didn't teach this. He just somehow or another understood this on his own. So then Hiranyakashipu turns back to Prahlad and says, you know, where did you get all this? So then he starts explaining the different his knowledge that he has received. We know that he has actually received this from his spiritual master, Narad Muni, when he was in the womb. Because otherwise, other than that, he's only been in the family of Hiranyakashipu. So then, Prahlad Maharaj goes on here, a few very important verses. Persons who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life, and who have therefore accepted as their leader or guru a similar blind man attached to external sense objects, cannot understand that the goal of life is to return home, back to Godhead, and engage in the service of Lord Vishnu. As blind men guided by other blind men miss the right path and fall into a ditch, materially attached men led by other materially attached men are bound by the ropes of fruit of labor, which are made of very strong cords, and they continue again and again in materialistic life, suffering the threefold miseries. Unless they smear upon their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, completely freed from material contamination, persons very much inclined towards materialistic life cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is glorified for his uncommon activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious and taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord in this way can one be freed from material contamination. So Prahlad Maharaj has mentioned that this knowledge will not be gained by hearing it or by endeavoring for it if one's heart is contaminated by material desire. So, and a materialistic person following another materialistic person will not give any result, just as a blind man following another blind man will not get to any useful destination. And he mentions that only then, therefore, by the grace of the devotees, we take shelter of the devotees, if we hear from them, if we serve them, we serve in the association of devotees, then we will actually then understand and become attached to the lotus feet of the Lord. So this, it was very interesting to note that the instructions of Prahlad Maharaj to his schoolmates and the instruction of Prahlad in general, these were some of the first teachings that Prabhupada would give to any temple when he would travel and preach. When Prabhupada would go to a new center that he had never been to before, then we see that many times the first lessons were Prahlad Maharaj's instructions to his schoolmates, so the instructions of Prahlad Maharaj. And as a regular feature, when he would travel and do programs, he would speak from the 5th canto of Bharat Maharaj's instructions to his sons, or the instructions of Prahlad Maharaj. So these are very essential teachings. So this is then, Prahlad Maharaj spoke all these things, and then after this, Hiranyakashipu, being upset, then threw Prahlad Maharaj off his lap onto the floor. then Prahlad Maharaj here is then, Hiranyakashipu asks that he be removed from the assembly, and that he is somehow or another worshipping, he's given up his own family tradition, and he is worshipping the killer of his own brother. Which is interesting, because in the previous chapters, he was telling how everything is moving by the will of the Supreme, and nothing happens without his sanction. But then when something does happen that he doesn't like, then the Supreme is to be blamed. Of course, he accepts that the Supreme is in control of everything, but he does feel that the Supreme should make things go the way Hiranyakashipu likes. So then after this, then we have the different personalities of Hiranyakashipu, all his friends and well-wishers and cronies. Then they took Prahlad and tried to kill him. So then here in text 39 to 40 begins those descriptions. The demons, Rakshasas, the servants of Hiranyakashipu, thus began striking the tender parts of Prahlad Maharaj's body with their tridents. The demons all had fearful faces, sharp teeth, and reddish coppery beards and hair, and they appeared extremely threatening, making a tumultuous sound, shouting, "Chop him up! Pierce him!" They began striking Prahlad Maharaj, who sat silently meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though a person who has no assets in pious activities performs some good deed, it will have no result. Thus the weapons of the demons had no tangible effects upon Prahlad Maharaj, because he was a devotee undisturbed by material conditions and fully engaged in meditating upon and serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unchangeable, who cannot be realized by the material senses, who is the soul of the entire universe. So it's the devotee here, Prahlad Maharaj, he's meditating on the Lord, so he doesn't interact with the material energy. He does not expect that there is some good or bad result coming from it, so naturally no result of the material world can harm him. For the devotee who is still conditioned, he expects the material world will give him trouble, and he expects that one can enjoy the material world. So because we have this enjoying mood and we're trying to get something out of it, right, just like we have the skin. So the skin can touch and we can enjoy touch. So as long as we feel that touch is something we can gain from the skin, then therefore also all the difficulties that also go with the skin, like the heat or rashes or boils or scratches, cuts, burns, those will also affect. They go together. So Prahlad, because he was not seeing the other one doesn't exist either, because they're both illusory. So the Lord then, therefore, because he does not think like that, therefore there was no reaction from the material energy like that. He was not engaged in this. So it's not some mystic potency. Of course, it is the blessing of the Lord. But it is that he is not interfacing with the material energy. Therefore, he is free from all good or bad results. Then continuing, "My dear King Yudhishthir, when all the attempts of the demons to kill Prahlad Maharaj were futile, the king of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, being most fearful, began contriving other means to kill him. Hiranyakashipu could not kill his son by throwing him beneath the feet of big elephants, throwing him amongst huge, fearful snakes, employing destructive spells, hurling him from the top of a hill, conjuring up illusory tricks, administering poison, starving him, exposing him to severe cold, winds, fire, and water, or throwing heavy stones to crush him. When Hiranyakashipu found that he could not in any way harm Prahlad, who was completely sinless, he was in great anxiety about what to do next. Hiranyakashipu thought, 'I have used many ill names in chastising this boy Prahlad, and had devised many means of killing him, but despite all of my endeavors, he could not be killed. Indeed, he saved himself by his own powers, without being affected in the least by these treacheries and abominable actions. So it's interesting that even Hiranyakashipu would call these abominable actions. The difference is the demons, they like abominable actions. They know it's abominable and it will give others more trouble, right? You can just come and just lop his head off, but it's not good enough. It's too simple, right? You have to make all kinds of strange and wonderful ways that they will suffer more. And then you feel better because you know that they are getting what they deserve because they have given us trouble. So it's interesting to note that they also think of it in this way, but they are satisfied to know that these are the ways in which things were done. So Hiranyakashipu continues, although he is very dear to me and is merely a child, he is situated in complete fearlessness. He resembles a dog's curved tail, which can never be straightened, because he never forgets my misbehavior and his connection with his master, Lord Vishnu. So here Prabhupada mentions that the word this, shuna, means a dog, and shifta means tail. The example is ordinary. However, one may try to straighten the dog's tail. It is never straight, but always curved. Shunashepta is also the name of a second son of Ajigartha. He was sold to Harishchandra, but he later took shelter at Vishwamitra, Harishchandra's enemy, and never left his side. So here just that you can't change his nature, and that he has taken up sides with the enemy. So it applies in both cases. Hiranyakashipu continues, I can see that this boy's strength is unlimited, for he has not feared any of my punishments. He appears immortal. Therefore, because of my enmity towards him, I shall die, or maybe this will not take place. Thinking in this way, the king of the daityas, morose and bereft of bodily luster, remains silent with his face downward. Then Skanda and Amarka, the two sons of Supracharya, spoke to him in secret. O Lord, we know that when you simply move your eyebrows, all the commanders of the various planets are most afraid. Without the help of any assistant, you have conquered all the three worlds. Therefore, we do not find any reason for you to be morose and full of anxiety. As for Prahlad, he is nothing but a child and cannot be a cause of anxiety. After all, his bad or good qualities have no value. Until the return of our spiritual master, Sukracharya arrested this child. Until the return of our spiritual master, Sukracharya, arrest this child with the ropes of Varuna, so that he will not flee in fear. In any case, by the time he is somewhat grown up and has assimilated our instructions or served our spiritual master, he will change in his intelligence. Thus, there is no need for anxiety. After hearing these instructions of Skanda and Amartha, the sons of his spiritual master, Hiranyakashipu agreed and requested them to instruct Prahlad in that system of occupational duty which is followed by royal household or families. So, it's interesting to know, he sees he is fearless, because fearless is the symptom of one who has surrendered fully to the Supreme Lord. When we surrendered fully to the Lord, then we become fearless. Otherwise, we are fearful. Because when we're, to that degree, we're not surrendered to the Lord, to that degree we expect that we can enjoy the material nature. Therefore, we are fearful of that reaction that is there. So then, if one is completely fearless, means he has completely taken shelter of the Lord and completely has no interest in trying to enjoy the material nature. And because of this, he is actually immortal. Because immortality is a mood of not feeling one is going to die. Right? That is the main problem, is this: people are worried about having to leave a situation that they're accustomed to. But if you're not accustomed to any situation, you're detached from every situation, then one is immortal. So he sees this in his son. though he prefers to approach it from a slightly different angle. He will become fearless because he's the biggest, baddest demon on the block, and no one can kill him. So in this way, he becomes fearless and immortal. But Prahlad Maharaj, he gets the same benefit simply by devotional service. Hiranyakashipu, by all his politics, strength, and mystic boons, he is trying to approach this, though he never gets it. And Prahlad gets this by surrendering to the Lord. So the benefits of all of the material activities and duties are received by one in devotional service. Therefore, thereafter, Skanda and Amarga systematically and unceasingly taught Prahlad Maharaj, who is very submissive and humble, about mundane religion, economic development, and sense gratification. So we see here the devotee is always nicely behaved. So he's nice with his father, though he didn't agree with him. He's nice with his teachers, though he doesn't agree with him. So this principle of being always pleasant and well-behaved is a very important aspect of the devotional culture. The teachers Skanda and Amarga instructed Prahlad Maharaj in the three kinds of material advancement called religion, economic development, and sense gratification. Prahlad, however, being situated above such instructions, did not like them, for such instructions are based on the duality of worldly affairs, which involve one in a materialistic way of life marked by birth, death, old age, and disease. When the teachers went home to attend to their household affairs, the students of the same age as Prahlad Maharaj would call him to take the opportunity of leisure hours for play. Prahlad Maharaj, who was truly the supreme learned person, then addressed his class friends in very sweet language, smiling. He began to teach them about the uselessness of materialistic way of life. Being very kind to them, he instructed them as follows. My dear King Yudhishthir, all the children were very much affectionate and respectful to Prahlad Maharaj, and because of their tender age, they were not so polluted by the instructions and actions of their teachers, who were attached to condemned duality and bodily comfort. Thus the boys surrounded Prahlad Maharaj, giving up their playthings, and sat down to hear him. Their hearts and eyes being fixed upon him, they looked at him with great eagerness. Prahlad Maharaj, although born in a demon family, was an exalted devotee, and he desired their welfare. Thus he began instructing them about the futility of materialistic life. So that ends the seventh chapter, Prabhupada's instructions thereof. Of Prahlad Maharaj, the saintly son of Hiranyakashipu. In chapter 6, this chapter describes Prahlad Maharaj's instructions to his class friends. In speaking to his friends, who are all sons of demons, Prahlad Maharaj stressed that every living entity, especially in human society, must be interested in spiritual realization from the very beginning of life. When human beings are children, they should be taught that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the worshipable deity for everyone. One should not be very much interested in material enjoyment. Instead, one should be satisfied with whatever material profits are easily obtainable. And because the duration of one's life is very short, one should utilize every moment for spiritual advancement. One may wrongly think, in the beginning of our lives, let us enjoy material facilities, and in old age we may become Krishna conscious. Such materialistic thoughts are always useless, because in old age one cannot be trained in the spiritual way of life. Therefore, from the very beginning of life, one should engage in devotional service. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. This is the duty of all living entities. Material education is infected by the three modes of material nature. The spiritual education, for which there is a great need in human society, is transcendental. Prahlad Maharaj disclosed the secret of how he had received instructions from Narad Muni. By accepting the lotus feet of Prahlad Maharaj, who is in the Parampara succession, is a very interesting point. Prabhupada says that Prahlada is really part of Prahlada. One will be able to understand the mode of spiritual life. In accepting this mode of activity, there is no need for material qualifications. After Prahlad Maharaj's class friends had listened to Prahlad Maharaj, they inquired how he had become so learned and advanced. In this way, the chapter ends. So in the previous chapter then, Skanda and Amartya had trained Prahlad Maharaj in the process of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Kama. They didn't bother with the moksha. That was not overly important to the demons, because demons mean they have great faith in material sense gratification. So they have faith that if we perform our Dharma properly, then we will get the economic development we require to enjoy the senses. So they have faith in material life. Everyone must have faith somewhere. Otherwise one cannot function. So they're having faith in material activities and in the scriptures, the authority of the Lord for these things. But we see Prahlad Maharaj didn't have much interest in this, because the intricacies of the Varnashram, for which one can develop very nicely in Kama and Moksha, I mean Kama and Artha, is not very interesting to the devotee. Prabhupada mentions here that whatever little bit, you do something according to proper etiquette and proper duty, and then whatever comes easily, one be satisfied with that. And then that is called devotional service. It's just like this. I have an activity. I perform that activity. From doing this activity, I get some economic development. With that economic development, I can properly feed myself, clothe myself, and take care of the family. And I see that this is by the grace of the Lord that this is coming. It is my service to take care of the family and these things. And in my balanced time that I have, I will chant Hare Krishna and perform service. Then this whole process of Dharma, Artha, and Kama, which is the process of karma, karma yoga, is called devotional service. It's not called karma. It's called karma yoga. But now, if I see that, I perform these activities and I get artha, I get material wealth. So if I perform more of these, I will get more material wealth. Then I will be able to enjoy more. And this family is mine, the house is mine, my money is mine, I am in control of everything. And okay, I'm pious, I give a little bit here and there. Then this is called materialism. This is Dharma, Artha, and Kama. So even though they look exactly the same, we can see the mentality is what is different. So that's what Krishna consciousness is, a change in the mentality. We don't change anything else, right? We don't stop eating or stop breathing. You know, we don't spend our time standing on our head. No, all these things go on, and we change our consciousness. And because consciousness has changed, therefore these other activities change. Right? Means we may say, no, so much has changed. But what has changed? Why has it changed? It changes because the mentality changes. Because now we want to remember Krishna and be a devotee of Krishna, then we only want to eat what Krishna eats. Therefore, we only eat those things that can be offered to Krishna. So which changed first? Right? And because we want to be, we like to think about Krishna, therefore we associate with the devotees. And from liking the devotees, we like to be like the devotees. So we dress like the devotees, we behave like the devotees, we speak like the devotees. So because of the change in consciousness, the external has come. So that's why Prabhupada says no need to change the externals. Because if you change the internal, the external automatically changes. The living entity develops the consciousness of a pig. In the next life, the externals will change, and they'll be in the body of a pig, guaranteed. They have the consciousness of a dog. Next life, they will have the body of a dog. Similarly, camels, asses, like this. It just goes on. So you change the consciousness, therefore everything changes. Therefore, it's International Society for Krishna Consciousness. That the Krishna consciousness changes. I mean, our consciousness changes the Krishna consciousness. Then everything else will automatically come. And if we find the externals are hard to affect, then it may be because the consciousness is not changing. Then it's difficult. If we cannot give up sinful activities, that's because the consciousness has not changed that significantly. It's changed enough to know that it's not good, but not enough to give us the strength, or not enough to take seriously the association of devotees that will give us that strength. So therefore, Prahlad Maharaj, hearing the Varnashram and the activities of karma, is not very pleased if it is not in connection with the Lord. But we'll see that he has heard these instructions, and we see details are not given. But just in the next couple of chapters, then the next thing after the story of Prahlad Maharaj, then Narad Muni will explain to Yudhishthira the whole system of Varnashram karma. But now it will be in connection, a relationship with the Lord. So that is pleasant to hear. Yudhishthira is interested to hear this. But to hear about it not in relationship to the Lord, what is the use? No taste, no interest. So this is what Prahlad has heard. And so Prahlad Maharaj's instructions. Prahlad Maharaj said, one who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of life from the very beginning of life. In other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements. The human body is most rarely achieved, and although temporary like other bodies, it is meaningful because in human life one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection. The human form of life affords one a chance to return home, back to Godhead. Therefore, every living entity, especially in the human form of life, must engage in devotional service to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. This devotional service is natural because Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the most beloved, the master of the soul, and the well-wisher of all other living entities. Prahlad Maharaj continued, my dear friends, born of demoniac families, the happiness perceived with reference to sense objects by contrast with the body can be obtained in any form of life, according to one's past fruitive activities. Such happiness is automatically obtained without endeavor, just as we obtain distress. Very important point. Is that the happiness and stress come automatically with what we've done before. Just because the living entity feels himself the doer and feels that by my doing it I get, therefore we do activities. And we then connect, I did this, therefore I got. But actually the happiness and distress are all going to come from previous activities. It's not that I work today, I got money. Many people work and no money. Some people don't work, they get money. So it's a matter of what is done before. But Krishna points out that everybody, being a soul, must be active, they must work. So therefore they should perform their duties, but not with the desire to get results, and not thinking that because of my activity, that is, I am the one producing it. No, it is coming from previous karma and the Lord's sanction. Then one is able to actually understand or be satisfied in what comes easily and how things work. Otherwise it becomes very difficult. Then we'll have to blame ourselves or someone else for bad things that come, or we're going to think ourselves or someone else to be the cause, when actually it's all just the modes of nature. Prahlad Maharaj continues, endeavors merely for sense gratification or material happiness through economic development are not to be performed, for they result only in the loss of time and energy with no actual profit. If one's endeavors are directed towards Krishna consciousness, one can surely attain the spiritual platform of self-realization. There's no such benefit from engaging oneself in economic development. Yeah, it says endeavors merely for sense gratification. It means if your endeavors for economic development are for Krishna consciousness, then that is fine. But that means we have to see it. We have to be able to explain it. It's not enough to just say, yes, I am doing my duty, but explain how we're doing our duty. We have to explain that how the duty is connected to Krishna. Krishna gave the rule how everyone should act. And then Krishna has told us to do those for his satisfaction. Then if we say, I must do the duty, then it has some Krishna conscious foundations. Otherwise, then we're just speaking, because then we're endeavoring and we want that result for ourselves. So we have to be very careful that we are endeavoring in knowledge, right? Not just in sentiment, but in knowledge. Therefore, while in material existence, havam ashritaha, a person fully competent to distinguish among right from wrong, must endeavor to achieve the highest goal of life as long as the body is stout and strong and is not embarrassed by dwindling. Fully competent to understand right from wrong means there must be training. So we must, in the young age, we learn what is right and wrong just on the material platform and in connection with Krishna. But ultimately we must see what is in connection with Krishna is right, what is not in connection with Krishna is wrong, even though materially it may be right. But if it's not in connection with Krishna, it's actually wrong. Text 6. Every human being has a maximum duration of life of 100 years. But for one who cannot control his senses, half of those years are completely lost because at night he sleeps 12 hours, being covered by ignorance. Therefore, such a person has a lifetime of only 50 years. In the tender age of childhood, when everyone is bewildered, one passes 10 years. Similarly, in boyhood, engaged in sporting and playing, one passes another 10 years. In this way, 20 years are wasted. Similarly, in old age, when one is invalid, unable to perform even material activities, one passes another 20 years wastefully. One whose mind and senses are uncontrolled becomes increasingly attached to family life because of insatiable lust and desires and very strong illusion. In such a madman's life, the remaining years are also wasted because even during those years he cannot engage himself in devotional service. What person to attach to household life due to being unable to control his senses can liberate himself? An attached householder is bound very strongly by ropes of affection for his family, wife, children, and other relatives. Money is so dear that one conceives of money as being sweeter than honey. Therefore, who can give up the desire to accumulate money, especially in household life? Thieves, professional servants, soldiers, and merchants try to acquire money even by risking their very lives. How can a person who is affectionate to his family, the core of his heart, being always filled with their pictures, give up their association? Specifically, a wife is always very kind and sympathetic and always pleases her husband in a solitary place. Who could give up the association of such a dear and affectionate wife? Small children talk in broken language, very pleasing to hear, and their affectionate father always thinks of their sweet words. How could he give up their association? One's elderly parents and one's sons and daughters are also very dear. A daughter is especially dear to her father, and while living at her husband's house, she is always in his mind. Who could give up that association? Aside from this, in household affairs, there are many decorated items of household furniture, and there are also animals and servants. Who could give up such comforts? The attached householder is like a silkworm, which weaves a cocoon in which it becomes imprisoned, unable to get out. Similarly, for the satisfaction of two important senses, the genitals and the tongue, one is bound by material conditions. How can one escape? One who is too attached cannot understand that he is wasting his valuable life for the maintenance of his family. He also fails to understand that the purpose of human life, a life suitable for realization of the absolute truth, is being imperceptibly spoiled. However, he is very cleverly attentive to seeing that not a single farthing is lost by mismanagement. Thus, although an attached person in material existence always suffers from threefold miseries, he does not develop a distaste for the way of material existence. If a person too attached to the duties of the family maintenance is unable to control his senses, the core of his heart is immersed in how to accumulate money. Although he knows that one who takes the wealth of others will be punished by the law of the government and by the laws of Yamaraj after death, he continues cheating others to acquire money. Oh my sons of demons, oh my friends, sons of demons, in this material world, even those who are apparently advanced in education have the propensity to consider this is mine and that is for others. Thus they are always engaged in providing the necessities of life to their families in a limited conception of family life. Just like uneducated cats and dogs, they are unable to take the spiritual knowledge. Instead, they are bewildered and overcome by ignorance. Oh, my dear friends, O sons of the demons, it is certain that no one bereft of the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead has been able to liberate himself from material bondage at any time or in any country. Rather, those bereft of knowledge of the Lord are bound by the material laws. They are factually addicted to sense gratification, and their target is women. Indeed, they are actually playthings in the hands of attractive women. Victimized by such a conception of life, they become surrounded by children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, and thus they are shackled to material bondage. Those who are very much addicted to this conception of life are called demons. Therefore, although you are sons of demons, keep aloof from such persons and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, the origin of all the demigods, because the ultimate goal for the devotees of Narayana is liberation from the bondage of material existence. So we see here is that he's explaining that the material life, one becomes caught up in all the various duties that are there. Especially in household life, there's many, many things to become very attached to that are necessary for in the performance of the household duties. So if one thinks that these are mine, and then one is very attached to them, one sees them as one's source of satisfaction and happiness, one becomes very much bound by these things. It becomes very difficult to get out. So this is the demoniac mentality that must be destroyed. So this is destroyed by this point here, that we understand the Supreme Lord. He is the cause of everything. He is the owner of everything. Everyone thing belongs to Him. All activities are to be done for Him. We understand this, then the same activities performed aren't the cause of bondage, but they help us free ourselves. But it must be done in that knowledge, otherwise it doesn't. It's not just we say, yes, I am household and I am doing everything. But we must be in knowledge, because it must be seen by the detachment that is coming. We are attached to so many things. When we get them, then we see that that is not actually what gives us satisfaction. Then one becomes detached, because one sees that it is Krishna that gives us satisfaction. And it is the performance of our duties for Krishna's satisfaction that we are happy doing. And that only is there because it's connected to Krishna. As long as it's connected to Krishna, it gives us satisfaction. If it's not connected to Krishna, it does not give us satisfaction. Then our duties give us some happiness. Text 19. My dear sons of demons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, is the original Super Soul, the Father of all living entities. Consequently, there are no impediments to pleasing Him or worshipping Him under any conditions, whether one be a child or an old man. The relationship between the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always a fact, and therefore there is no difficulty in pleasing the Lord. Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, who is infallible and indefatigable, is present in different forms of life, from the inert living beings, stavara, such as the plants, to Brahma, the foremost created living being. He is also present in the varieties of material creations and in material elements, the total material energy and the modes of material nature, sattva-gun, raja-gun, and tamagun. As well as the unmanifested material nature and the false ego. Although he is one, he is present everywhere. He is also the transcendental supersoul, the cause of all causes, who is present as the observer in the cores of the hearts of all living entities. He is indicated as that which is pervaded and as the all-pervading supersoul. But actually, he cannot be indicated. He is changeless and undivided. He is simply perceived as the supreme Satchidananda, eternally, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Being covered by the curtain of external energy, to the atheist, he appears non-existent. So this is an interesting point. This is from the 8th chapter of the Gita, that where, after explaining the living entity, then the Lord is the material nature, and the modes of material nature and karma, then the universal form is explained. This universal form, after being explained, how the Lord is expanded as all the elements and how he enters all the elements as the universal form, then it is explained about the Supersoul, how he is the one who we are worshipping. So though we understand that Krishna has entered everything in the material creation, we still are not worshipping Krishna in that form. We worship him personally as the Supersoul and as Bhagavan. So this and for those who do not understand or accept the Lord, they understand simply the Brahman aspect. So with knowledge we may understand Brahman. With knowledge we may understand the universal form. With more knowledge we may understand the Paramatma, but only with devotion can we understand Bhagavan. So these aspects are then being given here by Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj continues here. Therefore, my dear young friends, born of demons, please act in such a way that the Supreme Lord, who is beyond the conception of material knowledge, will be satisfied. Give up your demoniac nature and act without enmity or duality. Show mercy to all living entities by enlightening them in devotional service, thus becoming their well-wishers. Nothing is unobtainable for devotees who have satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the cause of all causes, the original source of everything. The Lord is the reservoir of unlimited spiritual qualities. For devotees, therefore, who are transcendental to the modes of material nature, what is the use of following the principles of religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, which are all automatically obtainable under the influence of the modes of nature? We devotees always glorify the lotus feet of the Lord, and therefore we need not ask for anything in terms of dharma, kama, artha, and moksha. Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the well-wisher and friend of all living entities, formally explained this transcendental knowledge to the great saint Narada. Such knowledge is extremely difficult to understand without the mercy of a saintly person like Narada. But everyone who has taken shelter of Narada's specific succession can understand this confidential knowledge. Lord Maharaj continued, I received this knowledge from the great saint Narada Muni, who is always engaged in devotional service. This knowledge, which is called Bhagavad Dharma, is fully scientific. It is based on logic and philosophy and is free from all material contamination. Religion, economic development, and sense gratification, these are described in the Vedas as Trivarga, or three ways to salvation. Within these three categories are education and self-realization. Ritualistic ceremonies performed according to Vedic injunction, logic, the science of law and order, and the various means of earning one's livelihood. These are the external objects, subject matters of study in the Vedas. and therefore I consider them material. However, I consider surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord Vishnu to be transcendental. The sons of the demons reply, Dear Prahlad, neither you nor we know any teacher or spiritual master other than Skanda and Amarga, the sons of Sukracharya. After all, we are children, and they are our controllers. For you especially, who always remain within the palace, it is very difficult to associate with a great personality. Dear friend, most gentle one, would you kindly explain how it was possible for you to hear Narada? Kindly dispel our doubts in this regard. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th canto, 6th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Prahlad Maharaj Instructs His Demoniac Schoolmates. So unless, are there any questions or anything on this? Otherwise, we're is there a reason why Prahlad Maharaj is not addressing the Lord as Krishna, but rather as Narayana? Because he is a worshipper of Vishnu. He's worshipping Lord Nrsimhadeva. So he knows him as this. Plus, Krishna, he is also Narayana. Narayana means from whom all the people are taking shelter, are one who is in the water, who is in the water of the Karanadak ocean or the Garbhadak ocean, or in the Hirudak ocean. He is always in the water, so he's known as Narayana. So Krishna has expanded as there. So if we address him as that, that's not a problem. Like, that's not difficult. But generally we see, because he is worshipping the Lord in his, as his Vishnu Murti. Anything else? So we'll end here. Dandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Prahlad Maharaj Ki, Lord Nrsimhadeva Ki, Jaya Jagodhara.